J.C. Corcoran Podcast. Said if I'm not stoned, I don't wanna. But she got so paranoid, her place I would avoid. I was in love with a girl on marijuana. I was in love with a girl on cocaine. She had everything going but her brain. We'd talk endlessly for hours, but by morning it goes sour. I was in love with a girl on cocaine. Through ecstasy, crystal meth and glue, I found no drug compares to you. All these pills, all this weed, I don't know just what I need. I was in love with a girl on LSD. She'd see things I'd never see. She broadened her perspective. Then I got more selective. I was in love with a girl on LSD. I threw ecstasy, crystal meth and glue. I found no drug compares to you. All these pills, all this weed, I don't know what I need. I was in love with a girl who drank beer till bad breath and all, she disappeared. She was blowing up real bad, but when she left I was still sad. I was in love with a girl who drank beer. I was in love with a girl on China Way. We were married for a year one night. Her memory still lingers, 'cause I burned all my fingers. I was in love with a girl on China Way. I was in love with a girl who drank coffee. There's times when I couldn't keep her off me. That caffeine got her going, but her ugly side was showing. I was in love with a girl who drank coffee. I was in love with a girl who was a dealer. I was afraid somebody'd come and steal her. We never used to fight, but the phone rang day and night. I was in love with a girl who was a dealer. Sure as hell, she got popped by the big guys.
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
Friday, November 4th, 2022, 4 days until the beginning and the end. By the way, yesterday I may have said it was the 4th, so let's correct that right away. I can't go back and fix what I did yesterday, but just, you know, I do know what day it is. I know that we're moving clocks back. You got to be careful. You have your little kids in the house. You got nieces, nephews, grandkids, whatever, or if you're like me and just have young kids, because I remember my daughter being confused when I was running around saying, oh, yeah, this is the weekend. We have to move all the clocks. We got to move all the clocks. Got to move all the clocks. And, you know, when you're 5, 6, 7 years old, you're like, why are we moving the clocks because in her mind, she's listening to exactly what I said, which is we're going to move the clocks. Move it where? Move it where? From the kitchen to the bedroom? It's like you have to take into consideration what you're saying and how it sounds to somebody. You know, I had an Asian guy living next door to me when I lived in Chesterfield, a really, really nice guy named Herb. And he was talking about how difficult it was to learn the English language, not conjugating verbs and understanding what words mean and stuff like that, but the idioms that we have in this country. And there's a good example right there. Because if you're from a foreign country, you don't speak English, and you come in and you hear somebody say, well, it is what it is. I don't mean to beat a dead horse. Imagine what's going through your mind when you're trying to learn that language with all that stuff. And there's a million things like that. Things that we say every single day. Anyhow, Daylight Saving Time ends at 2 o'clock in the morning, Saturday night into Sunday, which, by the way, is right about the time that you're thinking to yourself, oh, this is great. I'm getting an extra hour of sleep. You may need it because there's a storm that's going to be going through right about midnight. Saturday night into Sunday, right about midnight, and it sure looks like if you are asleep, you won't be for long because it's going to wake you up. This thing really looks like it is going to rock the place, and then it's going to dump heavy rain all over everything. And on one hand, that's good because there's drought conditions all over the state, all over the Midwest. It'll help a little bit, but you know what we need is a real slow, sort of deliberate soaking rain, and when it rains really, really hard, most of it just runs off into the sewers, and it's not that beneficial, not as much as if you had a nice slow soaking rain. But you can't have everything. Anyhow, that's going to be happening in the middle of the night tomorrow night, Saturday night into Sunday. Anyhow, in March, the Senate passed the Sunshine Protection Act that would make daylight saving time permanent, so the next time we spring forward, we might never shift back, but it's far from a sure thing. Where the whole thing stands, the House of Representatives still hasn't voted on the bill until it's passed in the House. Nothing happens, and we keep shifting our clocks back and forth. Now, our report in July said the whole thing hit a brick wall in the House based on the, quote, fundamental disagreements over its language, end quote. But it's also on the back burner because things like inflation are considered more pressing. So even if the House does pass the bill, the president has to sign off on it, and it's still not clear if Biden would do that or not. What we do know for sure is that we're going to be springing forward on March 12th next year, too. The question is whether or not we fall back again in November. We can't even get this done. With apologies to my old neighbor Herb, and I hate to beat a dead horse here, but you're missing a hell of a World Series. It's even surprising me how into it I've become. I want to see the Astros lose. They don't deserve to win anything. And at the same time, if they do win, I'll feel happy for Dusty Baker, I guess. Justin Verlander doesn't need any more luck or good things happening to him. He wins the Cy Young Awards. He's making a fortune. He is going to end up in the Hall of Fame. And he goes home to Kate Upton every night. What was the Rod Stewart song? Some guys have all the luck. The Astros beat the Phillies 3-2, take 3-2 lead in the World Series. Game 6, Saturday night back in Houston. Bryce Harper warmed the cockles of my heart last night. Again, this is one of those things I've been harping on for years and years and years. All right, so what you see all the time is a guy who hits a double or sometimes a triple to the right field corner, and as he is approaching third, wondering, I wonder if I should take off for third. He's looking over his shoulder into the right field corner. He's looking behind to see what the play is. And that's dead wrong. You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to pick up your third base coach. And sorry, Herb, I didn't really mean that, to go over there and pick him up. See, as I'm saying these things now, you realize how absolutely absurd some of these things sound to somebody who's trying to learn the language. Don't forget now, when you're running towards third, don't forget to pick up your third base coach. Pick him up? And you know what I mean. And you saw Bryce Harper do that last night. Almost nobody does that. And also this song, I want to talk about this, Joe Davis. Joe, you know, we're so used to hearing Joe Buck do the World Series, and he quit Fox and jumped over to ESPN at the end of last season. And there was a lot of speculation as to, you know, who's going to get the gig. So this Joe Davis has been doing a remarkable job. I mean, this guy's really good. 34 years old, grew up in Michigan, went to Beloit College on the Illinois-Wisconsin border up near Rockford, Illinois. He's a young guy. Ends up getting the Dodgers play-by-play guy, replacing Vin Scully. Talk about a primo gig, but also tremendous amounts of pressure. But it's, you know, if it were me, I'd fuck it up. I'd just be thinking about all the people saying nasty things about me because they all miss Vin Scully. And it's like, what do you want to do, bring him back from the dead and throw him out there? Besides, it's not my fault. I'm just a working play-by-play guy, and they gave me the job. What am I supposed to do, say no? But, you know, people are just mean because they're like, oh, you're no Vin Scully. I would succumb to all of that. But this guy, he's so good that he just starts doing the games, and people are like, hey, this guy's pretty good. It's not like one of these things where it's like, well, we're going to make you forget Vin Scully. It's not like that. He's just up there doing a really, really good job. And get this. I was doing a little research on him last night. This guy dabbles in documentary filmmaking. He won an Oscar. He's got an Academy Award for one of his short documentaries. So I don't know if he'll make you forget Vin Scully, but he might make you forget Joe Buck. I don't know. Donald Trump was in Iowa last night, and I watched quite a bit of the speech. I don't know why I chose to do that to myself, but I did. And he was up there just going on and on and on. It must have been like a two-hour speech last night. And get this. He was up there telling people that they built the wall. He thinks they built a wall. And he kept talking about the perfect phone call. And I don't know what that means. When he started using that term, what would make a phone call perfect? That's like saying, I turned on the television perfectly. Don't make any damn sense. I'm really looking forward to Wednesday. Wednesday when I can watch television without these goddamn political ads. Oh, God. Although I think I talk about this after every election. I'm going to go back and see if I can find this. There are Saturday Night Live's website now where you can go back and you can look at every single episode that's ever aired of Saturday Night Live. I went back because there was a bit back in the 90s that I remember really, really laughing at called Johnny Letter. It was like the Old West, but every time this, you know, cowboy type character got pissed off about something, he would write a letter. Instead of shooting the place up, he would sit down and write a letter to whom it may concern. I was very, very disappointed by your behavior in the saloon on Saturday night when you shot the place up. Just really, really, really funny. And there's a bit that they did. This is so funny. It was a bit about Will Ferrell was a politician who won the election. But even though he won, he didn't stop trashing his opponent, the guy he beat. So he was still running negative ads. Even after the election, he was still running campaign ads, talking about how bad the other guy was. And harassing him in a parking lot of a Costco and stuff with cameras running. Oh, my God, was it funny. I'll dig that up sometime and play it. You know, sometimes these things, the audio still sounds fine. You can play it, and sometimes you have to have the visual. It won't make any sense. But we'll find out. We'll track it down and see what we can find. Speaking of politics, Michael Moore, the filmmaker, and I got a love-hate relationship with this guy because, on one hand, the movie Roger and Me has got to be one of the most entertaining documentaries I've ever seen. It wasn't even really, they call it a documentary, what it wasn't really. And there were lots of inconsistencies in the movie. People picked it apart afterwards and said, that's not even, you know, we're showing rats in the city of Detroit when he's talking about Flint. Of course, I'm thinking, well, they are Michigan rats, so it's not that misleading. But there was just stuff like that. Even Ken Burns, who makes all those tremendous documentaries, was picked apart on the baseball thing, the nine-inning show. Keith Olbermann was all over him about one or two things. There were some ESPN guys that were jumping on him, too, saying, you know, this didn't happen this way. But as far as Michael Moore is concerned. And I thought Bowling for Columbine was really, really good. And then there were a couple other documentaries that, he made that I just don't think connected. They sort of flopped. And he's so overbearing, you know. And the whole, I dress like a guy who just looks like he came from the Goodwill store, it sort of weighs on me a little bit. But the guy does know what he's talking about on occasion. He's very well spoken when he goes on television, like on Bill Maher or something. Like, by the way, Maggie Haberman with Bill Maher tonight. But like I said, you know, Michael Moore, frequent guest on Bill Maher's show and stuff like that. Anyhow, get to the crux of the story. He says that the polling in this country is almost useless now. There are certain groups of people who just refuse to talk to pollsters. And the poll, I was listening to something on one of the 24-hour news stations yesterday where they were talking about it, saying the people who are putting the polls together are getting really sensitive about criticism because they know, and they are trying to convince all of us that they still are getting a good, solid, representative sampling that leads to the numbers you get in the polls. For example, like the marijuana referendum that you're going to be voting on on Tuesday, 61% of people who were polled said that they are certain to cast a yes vote on that referendum. So like I said, we're only 4 days away from finding out, you know, how close the polls really are. And so many of these races all over the country are toss-ups to the point where the polls are sort of useless in telling us who's going to win on Tuesday. And really with both parties have been doing now for the last couple of days and will do so for the next 4 days. Nobody's trying to win over new voters anymore. What's happening right now is it's all about that base. All of the efforts right now are for both political parties to get their people to the polling places on Tuesday. That's what the whole thing is about now. Michael Moore has been beating on this drum now for, a little over a month. Maybe you saw the story. He insists that there is a blue wave that's going to hit on Tuesday. While everybody else is talking about a red wave, he's like, bullshit. It's all wrong. It's going to be people who, for whatever reason, feel very, very strongly about things from the blue side as opposed to the red side. We'll find out in 4 days. Update on my vertigo. So yesterday I was texting back and forth with Mike Bush. Some of you may remember that back in the late 80s, early 90s, when Mike Bush used to do our sports, he frequently had to take the day off because he suffered from terrible vertigo issues. And this is brand new territory for me. I know nothing about vertigo. I only know that it appears I've got it now. I had some rough days this week. And when, you know, you're like, I'm suffering from every other injury and affliction. Why not vertigo too? Why not? So he recommended some over-the-counter stuff. I went to the drugstore and talked to them. I'm like, yeah, take this. And it seems to have helped a little bit. So if it allows me to just go on with my life at this point, I'm in favor of it. Thank you to those of you who made suggestions and voiced concerns and stuff like that. Speaking of politics, President Biden tweeted yesterday that he plans to crack down on processing fees for concert tickets. But instead of praise, he got a lot of comments about how there are bigger issues that we should be focused on. Jimmy Kimmel, by the way, said he lost half his audience over his political stance. But back at the beginning of the Trump era, he told ABC they could hire somebody else if they didn't like what he was doing. Netflix, be careful on this now because you're hearing about these new ad-supported tiers that they have launched, but it's missing some big titles like Arrested Development, House of Cards, stuff like that. And Netflix says it's because of licensing restrictions, but they're working on it. But you better make sure that before you cut the cord or, you know, pick up one of those new Netflix tiers, that some of the shows that you're subscribing for are actually there. Kanye West tweeted he's taking a 30-day cleanse, during which he will not speak, drink, have sex, or watch porn. But he did continue tweeting about the Jews. So the entertainment continues. Amy Schumer hosting Saturday Night Live this weekend. Looking forward to that. Sunday Night Football, Chiefs hosting Tennessee. It's a decent game. World Series Game 7, if necessary. and it appears that it's going to be, will be on Sunday night, 6 o'clock. Late Night Tonight, Mariah Carey with Jimmy Fallon. Kimmel's got Lupita Nyong'o, and Stephen Colbert's got a new show, but we don't know what's going to be on it yet. People Magazine's Sexiest Man Alive will be revealed Monday night on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and then he's live on Tuesday night after the voting is over. There's a movie in the works about Hank Aaron's pursuit of Babe Ruth's home run record. One part 61, one part 42. David Letterman interviewing Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Upcoming episode of the Netflix show My Next Guest Needs No Introduction. Bruce Springsteen, John Mellencamp, The Edge, Pink, and Sheryl Crow among the inductors at tomorrow's Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ceremony. You will not see it until November 19th on HBO. And it was 11 years ago today, in 2011, 60 Minutes legend Andy Rooney died at the age of 92. Birthdays this weekend: Bethany Frankel, one of the original Real Housewives, 52. Diddy, 53. Matthew McConaughey, 53. Ralph Macchio, 61. Jeff Probst from Survivor, 61. Kathy Griffin, 62. Laura Bush, W's wife, 76. Loretta Swit from MASH, 85. Saturday birthdays: one of our best actors working these days, Sam Rockwell, 54. Tatum O'Neill, 59. Tilda Swinton gives me the creeps, 62. Bryan Adams cuts like a knife, 63. Kris Jenner, the overlord of the Kardashian empire, 67. Bill Walton, 70. Peter Noon, that would be Herman of Herman's Hermit, 75. Art Garfunkel, 81. Sunday, Emma Stone turns 34. Tandy Newton, 50. Rebecca Romijn, 50. Ethan Hawke, 52. Maria Shriver, just guessing she does all of her own housework now, no maids, 67. Sally Field turns 76 on Sunday. I tell this story not because of what happened on this date in 1985, but what happened about 14 years later in 1999, which made no sense. So in 1985, Joan Rivers comes to town, and I call up her people, and I say, I'll bring a camera crew over, and we'll put her on Channel 5, number one station in town. Okay, fine. Come on by. Joan Rivers is just sitting there in all of her resplendence. Very, very expensive clothing and jewelry. Perfect hair, makeup. We sit down. We have a fairly uneventful, but I guess basically entertaining conversation, which I then, of course, put on Channel 5. So when they called me in the late 90s and said, we have an opportunity for Joan Rivers, it's like, oh, I sort of know her. We did an interview years back, and it went really, really well. This one will be on satellite, so we'll be sitting in the radio studio in St. Louis. She'll be sitting in a radio studio in New York City, and you guys will be able to hear one another, and boom, let's set up that interview. Great. And I'm frequently asked about this because I never got a chance to ask the question that I wanted to ask. And you'll hear the aftermath of this. Most of you have heard this before, but it's, you know, with this little asterisk, sometimes it makes the story even more interesting. So after she left The Tonight Show, filling in for Johnny Carson, and those two never talked to each other again after all that, they gave Joan Rivers two syndicated shows, one at night that didn't do very well. It got canceled. So then they said, you know what? Let's try putting her on in syndication in the middle of the day. Like, you know, 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, something like that. Let's see how that goes. And the show actually did pretty well there for a couple of years. And she started doing this thing where she was just constantly picking on Yoko Ono. Now, I have to tell you something. John Lennon loved Yoko Ono. And I know a lot of people don't understand that. But the fact remains, he was in love with her. And then you meet Yoko Ono, which I have a couple of times, and she is absolutely darling. She's the sweetest person ever. As I look over to my little trophy case wall here, I always tell people the story. I've interviewed her a couple of times, but in one instance, the last minute she had to cancel the interview because of some sort of scheduling conflict, and I was like, oh, sort of pissed about that, but you know, what are you going to do? It happens, right? I don't think I was pissed. I was probably just more disappointed. So about a week later, a box shows up at the radio station. Now, you have to understand something. You know, she's talking to maybe 30 people that day. Somebody had to say, find out who all of those people are that I was supposed to talk to. You know, Yoko talking to her assistant, find out who all those people were, and send them this stuff. And she sent me a beautiful Imagine ring, a pewter little statue of John Lennon, and one other piece of memorabilia. really, really nice, well-crafted, expensive-looking stuff. And she sent that to me. So, first of all, if you're one of those people who thinks that Yoko Ono broke up the Beatles, I don't know what to tell you. The Beatles collapsed under their own weight. It was, you know, I'm not going to do a whole synopsis of why the Beatles broke up, but suffice to say, it was not Yoko's fault. But people around the world are pissed, still pissed about the Beatles breaking up. And so they need to blame somebody, makes them feel better if they have an enemy. And for a lot of those people, she's it. But I always make it a point to say, look, I don't know what she's like in her business dealings or anything like that. All I know is I've met her a couple of times. I've interviewed her a couple of times, and she's absolutely darling. She's one of the sweetest people I've ever met. And she sent me gifts. So when somebody, you know, starts laying into Yoko Ono, it sort of bothers me a little bit. And Joan Rivers was doing it like on a daily basis. And what I wanted to ask her was, you had a tragedy in your marriage. Your husband killed himself. He committed suicide. And Yoko Ono lost her husband because of an assassination. I'm not exactly sure how I was going to phrase the question because I don't remember. It was a long time ago, but I know I was going to ask her something about that. That was going to be the question. And as you'll recall, I never got to that question.
All right. Now, Joan, I was a big fan of yours as you were coming up with the business, and a lot of comedians really owe a lot to you for having blazed the trail early on. Something happened in the 80s where you started to lose me, and I'll tell you where it was. It was
like I'm interested.
It was the
don't bother. No, you want to know? No. I don't give a. I hate to tell you what. I'm
going
to say what. I don't care. I lost you.
Know.
Screw you. I don't care. I don't want to know.
I
don't want to know because it's 2001.
This is an
I have
interview.
A special on E at 9 o'clock.
This is an
or 8
interview.
O'clock, depending if it's Central Time. I have
like,
a fashion review on Saturday.
You're just not going to answer the question.
I'm not interested. Don't give me negative. I'll tell you. You're stuck in a local station.
No.
Are we going to stop being mean to each other? What is this? Get up to have a nice interview, and you're going to tell me.
I didn't tell you anything.
I had a career for 31 years.
I didn't tell
you
anything.
You don't like me from the 80s? Go to hell.
I am.
Go to hell. I'm not interested. And watch 9 p.m. April 1st, Sunday. That's what I'm here to talk about on E. And Saturday, the fashion review. Saturday afternoon, Saturday night. I don't want your critique. Take your critique and put it where the sun don't shine. I'm out of here.
Anybody thinking to themselves, well, her husband's suicide is starting to make a little more sense now, huh? I was mentioning Sheryl Crow a little while ago. It was on this date back in the year 2000. The Sheryl Crow, Don Henley, Kevin Kline all appeared on stage at the pageant for the I'm Still With Mel rally and fundraiser. This was after Mel Carnahan's plane went down in a thunderstorm, and two out of these three Missourians, plus Don Henley, got together and put on a show. I was able to plug into the soundboard, and I still have that entire concert on tape. But Don Henley was up there singing like Irish folk songs for a good chunk of the time, and people were just talking because they were not interested. And the noise from the crowd was louder than Don Henley performing on stage. It just did not connect with the audience. It was on this date in 1989. I was in Los Angeles interviewing, among other people, Dolly Parton, who was 44 at the time, doing the role in Steel Magnolias with Julia Roberts. And I've always told people Dolly Parton was surprisingly, breathtakingly beautiful. I was not expecting that at all. That was 1989. In 1984, I had been on the air at KSHE in St. Louis for, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 months, making a little money for the first time in my life. And I took some of that money and I bought, for me, something that was a very, very big deal. Now, a lot of guys, you're in your early 30s, you start making money for the first time, and so you go out and you buy some sort of sports car or something like that. For me, 1984 on this date, I bought an IBM Selectric typewriter. Oh, man, was that a big deal for me? And I know that that choice may come as a surprise to you, but I'm It's God's honest truth. That was a really, really big deal for me to have an IBM Selectric typewriter in my little office there. It was on this date, 1997, a lot of you will recall, I was doing a charity appearance at the, well, it was a, let me get them all involved. It was a hotel about a block and a half from Busch Stadium. And it was on a Friday night, and it was to raise awareness for a charity. And I'm not going to go through the whole thing again, but some people were hiding around the corner and I was walking around interviewing people coming out of the parking garage. We're just trying to have a good time on a Friday evening as people park their cars and usher into Busch Stadium for a Friday night baseball game. And we're like, we're going to have all these people coming right past us, raise awareness, maybe some money for this charity. They asked us to do it and we did. But like I said, hiding around the corner in what was an elaborate setup. And when I say elaborate, I'm talking about one entire radio station in on the whole thing to set me up to make it look like I attacked somebody when in fact they attacked me and ended up in a lawsuit. It was on this date in 1997 that my lawsuit against Stephen DC began. It went 6 days. I was awarded $370,000 by the jury, completely exonerated from any wrongdoing of any kind. It was whimpering little assholes on the witness stand. One guy up there was crying. The jury was like, one of the jurors is a guy who works at a Schnucks next to the Esquire Theater. And I ran into him and he's like, well, you know, we went in there for the deliberations. We said, give him $1 million. And there was one stringy haired, oh God, she was disgusting. This one juror who came in every single day and wore a Casey t-shirt. And she was the little asshole that fought the whole thing. She was like, no, I don't want to give him $1 million. I want to give him $1 million. And okay, if you ever served on jury duty, you know, you got to get everybody on the same page. And so finally, for whatever, I don't know how they arrived at $370,000, but they did. That trial began on this date in 1997. Swell bunch of guys. Couldn't happen to a nicer group of guys. Now, if you've been listening to this whole thing today and yesterday, you might tell that I sound a little scatterbrained and my speech is not as crisp as it normally is. And I just think it's the side effects of this medication I'm taking. The druggist was like, well, it's going to make you drowsy. I'm like, yeah, I understand a lot of almost everything you take. You ever see the litany of side effects they say can happen. You take anything, take Tylenol, and there's two pages of shit that will tell you all the bad things that can happen to you if you just take a Tylenol. No big news. She goes, no, you do. This is going to make you drowsy. I'm like, I don't care. Drowsy is better than dizzy. Hand it over. So it appears to have really, really helped getting rid of the vertigo, but it slurs your speech, and about half of my brain is just missing here. So it just sounded a little bit, I think I just did it right there. I was, I'm talking, I'm hearing myself. It's making sense to me, but somewhere between my brain thinking of the words and then the words actually coming out of my mouth, it's going through some sort of a mental minefield, which is making my speech sound a little weird. Anyhow, we're hoping that when we reconvene on Monday, and then, of course, especially on Tuesday, and especially on Wednesday in the aftermath of the midterms, when we're sitting here scratching our heads trying to figure out what just happened, whatever that turns out to be, hopefully by then I'll be the vertigo will be over. I'll be off this goddamn stuff and I'll start sounding like myself again. I don't think I'm going to be doing any driving today. Let's just leave it at that. And to close, scientists say they have developed a new plastic-like material. I'll give it 6 weeks before Renee Zellweger starts injecting it into her face. And with that, J.C. Corcoran podcast for Friday, November 4th, 2022 is in the can. 4 days until the beginning of the end. Don't forget, daylight saving time over the weekend. Also, tomorrow night, Saturday into Sunday, it's going to rock and roll a little bit right in the middle of the night, right about the time you're, well, a lot of people at midnight on a Friday night into Saturday are just getting home on Saturday night at midnight. A lot of people are just going out. So however it affects you, just be aware of the fact you get an extra hour either of sleep or out on the streets. We'll see. We'll talk to you on Monday morning. Don't forget now, spread the word that we are here at the J.C. Corcoran Podcast every weekday morning right about this time. JCOnTheLine.com is the place. It's really easy. Make sure you tell all your friends that we're here every weekday morning. Email me, JC at JCOnTheLine.com. I'm in jail right now on Facebook, the Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you on Monday. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.